It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 425 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's a special week here at the podcast, so I've got three guests to celebrate. First up is David Byrne, who has a Kickstarter going on for Stake, a great vampire horror book that has already met its goal, but has great stretch goals coming, so I'm sure you're going to want to participate in those. David is the creator of The Couch and Spider Man. Then we get a quick reminder from Frank Gogol, the creator of Dead End Kids and Grief, who's reminding us to sign up for his upcoming book, No Heroin, which we talked about in a previous episode. Then everything wraps up with Sam Johnson from Geek Girl. And remember, that's Geek-Girl. He's also got a Kickstarter for the series, which is now ongoing. And he has lots to fill us in on in the Geek Girl universe, including Cabercini and other characters who are going to show up. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's an awful lot to get to in this special episode of the podcast, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast David Byrne, creative force behind, let's see, Stake, and then let's see, Spider Man, which we'll talk about shortly, and let's see, the first one was The Couch. So how you doing, David?
I'm doing great. How are you this evening?
Good. Now, of course, let's get right to the important stuff. You've got a Kickstarter going on right now. So talk about the Kickstarter. This is for Stake, as I understand it. Tell us about it and what we can do.
All right. Well, it's Stake, S-T-A-K-E, not the meat. And this is a Kickstarter for, it's a Women of Comics exclusive cover collection. So the book is about a... Well, let me read you the description that I have online.
Okay.
Vampires are real. Angel lost her two best friends to them on live TV. Now she's after the one who started it all. She is Stake. So basically it's for people who like Buffy and Veronica Mars. She's kind of a cross between those two characters in that she's a late teen vampire hunter, but she's got a really sarcastic mouth. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got to say, I've read your stuff, and this is very different from the previous two stuff you've done. Were you going in a different direction? Did you want to try different writing muscles out? How did you go and do Stake, which is basically a horror book?
Really, I don't see myself as any particular genre of a writer. It's just whatever story I'm feeling at the moment. Mm-hmm. So with that one, it was I had the idea, and... basically, when it hits me, I have to write it down. So I dove in, but as you know, I have other projects going on at the same time. So I did this while I was doing The Couch, and then Spider-Man popped up in the middle of that as well. So it's interesting shifting gears even in the middle of the process, you know?
Well, you know, you've got different kind of creative muscles to use, as I like to put it. And to have you be able to go and do a very different book, you know, to write a very different story is, I always think, a good sign for a writer. When, you know, if somebody always writes cowboy stories and that's all they really write, you know, after a while you kind of have to retread the same ground. But with this one, like I said, this is you know, I think thematically and tonally, this is a very different story from the other books that you've written. So okay, so you were a big fan of Buffy, were you?
Not a huge fan, but I love the concept, and I do love vampires. You know, it's vampires and space stuff. Anything that comes on, I'll watch it.
Okay.
Or read it. You know, whatever. You put it in front of me, and I'll consume it.
Okay. So, because I'm kind of interested, what was it that – was there something that came up that brought you going this direction? Did you read something or see something? Because sometimes – well, I'll tell you a story why I'm asking this question. There was a guy I knew in the U.K. who watched a documentary on slaughtering pigs, and he came up with a book, a comic book, believe it or not, called Slaughterman's Creed,
which was I said to him, I can't say that if I watched that, I would come up with a comic book concept out of it. So I'm always interested in how the creative process works. Was there some kind of inspiration that made this story happen, or was it just, you know, just kind of came out of the blue and hit you?
It was kind of a combination. The story hit me out of the blue, but it was off of a sort of a thematic idea I had on vampires a long time ago, whereas they were not the supernatural beings that we're all used to and everything. Mm-hmm. They're actually biological creatures that are just really an evolutionary step. Mm-hmm. So sort of an apex predator that has been hidden for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So, and then I basically had to brainstorm and say, well, how can I bring that into modern day? And as time goes on, obviously it would become harder and harder to hide yourself. So it was sort of a situation where it was like, well, how would they announce themselves? And this was an instance where the one of the, basically the main villain said, well, I'm just going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, there have been several different kinds of vampires. I'm not much for the romantic ones, you know, the ones that the women just fall over, faint over in front of and stuff like that. It doesn't get to me. But I always liked, even though that was an element of Dracula, it was something that was a minor part of the character to me. That's what I said. That. Now, you don't go that route. There's not a lot of romance in this book, shall we say. We'll start off with that, you don't expect a lot of romance. This is, like I said, more of a horror look at it. One of the scariest parts about this book, though, is you're using modern technologies to add to the horror of it. You know, people... Suddenly, this main guy, he goes by the name Ashwin that I see. Am I pronouncing that right, Ashwin? Or Vin?
Ashwin.
Ashwin, that's right. He uses a kind of a German-sounding way, or Russian.
Correct.
Way to pronounce it. And he's on the television talking to people, which, of course, if you want to scare us these days, that's the way to do it. You know, if you do it person to person, it's not quite as good as it is to get out there and suddenly be seen by thousands of people. Was that why you went that route with him? Was that why he chose to go on TV to announce his presence?
Yeah, it's not spoiling too much to say that basically he had been looking for the other vampires that, you know, were kind of a shadow society and had a hierarchy above him to go ahead and come forward into the world, and they kept rejecting him, so he took it upon himself and did it. Mm-hmm. And he used what we have at our disposal, which is that, you know, you put something online and it goes viral.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't necessarily TV, it was more the internet.
It got picked up pretty much instantly, though, because he went live and people got it, so they put it on.
See, that's a common thing these days now. People going on, you know, you get millions of views and suddenly you're a star, you know, where before that was nothing. I mean, people didn't care about those kinds of things, but out of the blue, suddenly you're a hit, you know, when all these people are watching it. And basically it starts out that way. Now, let's get into the Stake character, though, because I'm fascinated by her. Talk a little bit about her and who she is.
Okay, well, she's her name is Angel. And she was basically orphaned by her mother killing her father over him beating her. Hmm. And the family she goes to live with is actually a vampire family that she doesn't know they are, and neither does their daughter, because in our world, basically the biology is different and you don't really become you don't realize you're a vampire until you basically hit a puberty for that. Mm-hmm. So for all intents and purposes, up until the point you hit that puberty, you basically seem like a normal human being. You even take the same nutrition to grow. Hmm.
Okay, so there's no desire for blood or anything until that happens.
Correct.
Okay, so that's a way to hide amongst
exactly.
That stuff.
Yep, hide in plain sight.
Wow. So that's good. Now, as far as like the population, do you have an idea of like what percent of the population vampires tend to take up in your story?
It would be like less than a tenth of a percent. It's very low because they're an apex predator, obviously, and they need to stay hidden. Mm-hmm. And it's part of their laws in their own society is to maintain that those numbers stay low. Mm-hmm. so that they don't become obvious. And it's even something I'm going to be able to explore as one-shot spinoffs between arcs, is basically exploring some of the history by going back and telling stories with the main vampire female character from this series, Jessamy, who is basically Angel's partner. We get to see her stories from earlier in her life.
It's interesting because, you know, there's an interesting contrast. There's something about vampire slayers and vampires working together that's appealing to us.
Yes.
You know, the two sides, I guess it's like Klingons on the Enterprise and stuff like that.
Yep, it's all about accountability.
Well, not only that, there's tension between the two. You know, suddenly you have people doing things and there's they may not agree on what the course of action to take is. And that conflict is interesting to us to watch. So that's pretty cool as far as that goes. So I'm very fascinated by the style of art, too. Again, this is something different from your other books. Talk about how you came across the artist and what that person's involvement was in the process.
Well, yep, my other stuff was very cartoony, but this is a much more frenetic, if you want, very rough, dark to kind of match the tone of the story. The artist is Luis Bernardino. He is a Portuguese artist living in Vietnam at the moment. He was a fine artist until a friend of a friend basically put us in contact. I told him what I wanted to do, and he was really interested and knocked out some character concepts. And basically from there, he was all in, and he's been working on it for about a year for me now.
Wow. Now, the color schemes are different as well. You know, the other stuff you did was full color. This is black and white with red involved. Of course, that makes sense. As far as using a different scheme like that, was that what you intended? Was that something that developed as you guys worked together on the art? How did that develop?
It's basically, we did talk it out. He did some sketches in color, and then he showed me the art in black and white and said, can we go with this? And I looked it over and said, if we sprinkle some red in for bloods, and on the occasion we'll do colors that really make whatever the scene is, if it needs something to stand out, we'll have it pop out. Like, there's going to be a taser later in one of the issues, and it'll have crackling blue. But the thing we're still talking about is he has a very unique art style. And if you happen to see the character sketches that he did in color, we may still go ahead and play around with coloring an issue to see how it comes out. You know, do a couple sample pages, and then we'll decide if we want to go from there. Personally, I like the old school black and white, and the red gives it a bit of pizzazz.
The black and white, of course, is a more horrific thing. I mean, early horror movies, of course, were in black and white, and that's what, you know, our first exposure really as a culture to horror was through black and white. So I still find that the most compelling. You know, you can hide things in the shadows a lot better than in color, seems like. Things just kind of develop a little more, you know, you talked about frenetic, a little more frenetically that way with the black and white. And his art style seems to lend to that really well.
It does, and then you see in some pages he goes very minimal, and it really gives you a nice stark contrast. Like, we've got a lot of action, and then we go to a scene in a hospital where it's very light. And he doesn't use all that dark shading he does in the background.
Now, this is much more of an action-oriented story. Things start to happen, you know, let's say the couch is much more of a psychological drama.
Yeah, all the action is basically off-screen in that.
Yeah, this is very different. You get to flex your action writing muscles to talk about what should happen, and of course you cater it to the artist's style as well too. And that must have been a little bit of a change for you. Was that something you really wanted to get into after writing a more dramatic book than an action oriented one?
Really, it just comes down to the story for me. So if the story dictates there's action, then we have to put the action in. Mm-hmm. It is a different type of writing. There, it's not as cerebral when you're laying it out. It's more technical. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that you're basically laying it out so that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And my job is to get it across to him. So mm-hmm. what's in my head is what he puts on the page.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is interesting too, because is English is, do you speak English, or is that something you have to kind of communicate across?
His English is very good.
Oh, good. Well, that's good, because, you know, it's not always the case. There are some folks that they have to go through and they use the Google language to translate and stuff. It doesn't always go across. Google is still an imperfect thing. But so if you can do that with, you know, just person to person, even though it's across the internet, it's still probably a lot easier than it is to try to use a computer in between you.
Yeah, the only issue we really have is sometimes slang and colloquialisms. Where I'll say something and he'll take it literally and be like, I don't understand what you're saying.
That's right, because like in Spanish, if you say somebody hit the ceiling, they don't think that somebody leaped, you know, jumped up accidentally and hit the ceiling. They think you're up there on a ladder with a hammer banging on the ceiling, which mm-hmm. they don't get. So that's kind of a thing that you're talking about there. The changes in the language sometimes you have to be really conscious of.
Yep. Every once in a while, I just get a message from him that's like, it's one word with a question mark.
Which is cool, because I do like his facial expressions a lot. You know, he has a way of communicating, especially use of the eyes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. He has it's a little bit of a minimalistic style on some lenses. It's a little more scattered on some levels. But the thing of it is that it communicates the emotion, I think, really well, you know, through the eyes and through the face, especially like the mouth. If somebody's yelling, you know, the mouth is open really wide, you know, and mm-hmm. if somebody doesn't open their mouth when they're speaking on the image, you know that there's something going on with the way that he mm-hmm. does it. So I think that's really cool about the way that he does that.
Yeah, you mentioned the eyes. He definitely does a lot with the eyes too.
Which is, you know, not everybody can do that very well. Some people's eyes look all the same.
Right.
Even if they're yelling as opposed to when they're crying, there's a little water coming out of that same eye. And I like to see something different. I like to see the emotion coming across. I think that he does that really well.
Yeah, I mean, because what's a story without emotion, right?
Right.
Then it's literally, I couldn't do a story that was just action. I will put on action movies and turn them on, and they'll be just in the background. That's about as much as I can do if there's not much else going on. I really actually lose interest now.
Well, it's a video game to me if we don't care about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just punching and kicking and jumping and running, and, you know, I remember the first time I ever played like Wolfenstein, I'm standing there with a gun and you're just going down the hallway and you're shooting stuff, and I lasted about 5 minutes on that. And I kind of went, no, I need something going on more than this.
Well, you wanted a plot?
Yeah. I want a story in this thing, doggone it. People just don't want to do that. So that's cool. So, okay, so the Kickstarter is going on right now. When is it going to conclude?
March 31st, at 11:59 p.m. So it will go all the way through the end of the month.
So Eastern time.
Yes.
Okay, so that'll be good. So, I mean, this is obviously going to post after we talk. How's it coming along? I mean, when we're talking now, how are you doing?
We're a week in, and we are 175% funded.
Oh, man. So, hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I was actually stunned. We funded in 11 hours, asking 4,000, and I was actually not prepared for it to happen that fast. I didn't have my stretch goals ready.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I thought so.
Good thing about that. So now that you've got stretch goals, do you want to talk about what some of them are?
The first one we did was for 5,500, DC cover artist Derek Chu has mm-hmm. actually done a cover for Stake that we'll be using down the road. Mm-hmm. But it was we used his sketch version for the Ashcan that came out last year and sold extremely well. Mm-hmm. But the full art I haven't used yet, so we're doing a actual comic-sized print mm-hmm. that everyone who pledged for a physical tier mm-hmm. will get one of for free. Mm. The one we're working on right now is a additional cover for anyone who pledged $30 or more will actually get another free book with a cover by, I'm going to try to say her name. She's Hungarian, and it's very hard, but Laura Mizambadi.
Okay.
I believe that's how you say it, but her art is completely different than anyone else on the book, and the cover she did is fantastic.
Mm.
We're about $450 away from that.
Cool, because, you know, I always think that comics should come with pronunciation guides for people's names. You know, Bill Sienkiewicz, for the longest time, I had no idea how you pronounced his name.
I always thought it was Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I thought that was Sienkiewicz or something like that. I couldn't figure it out. And then when I went to New York a couple of years ago, he had a booth, and there was a great big banner going across it that said Sin in great big word letters, Kev-itch, Sienkiewicz. And I thought, okay, now I get it. You know, they had to put a big banner out in the middle of New York Comic Con before a lot of people figured out what that was. So it'd be nice to have those kinds of things in comics to do that. Although most people don't care. You know, I mean, it's only those of us who have to audibly deal with their names and stuff that we struggle. I've had several people on this podcast, their names were so beautiful I couldn't pronounce them, and I've had to say to them, and what's your name? Go ahead and say your name, because I'm sure I'll mess it up. And get them to do it, because it's good stuff. Now, of course, with Stake, now this is issue one, and you've talked, there's obviously more in the planning. This initial story, do you know how many issues you want to do with that?
The initial arc will be 6 issues. Going forward after that, they will either be 5 or 6. This one may have been slightly longer because we did the first issue is more of an introduction to the world and the character.
Mm-hmm.
But I should be able to play them out in 5 or 6 issue blocks where basically during the opening scene, it's on the Kickstarter, so this isn't giving anything away, but the main vampire baddie is ripping someone's heart out, and behind him he's got 3 cronies, and it's almost going to be, talking about what you said before, video game style. Mm-hmm. She's going to spend each arc tracking one of them down, or at least trying. But to keep it alive, she's basically also got, with the Vampire Bounty Hunting Union, her and Jessamy are going to end up having cases as well that they deal with at the same time. So it's kind of like a TV show where you've got that overarching storyline and then smaller storylines along the way to keep the story flowing and more realistic.
Well, it'll be good because, you know, this is I think about vampires, there's a lot to explore there. I don't think people really even just scratch the surface to be funny about that, to discover what's really going on in the society and things like that with this. I get a sense from reading about Ashvin and stuff like that there is a society that he's involved with that we're going to find out more about as the story unfolds.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We'll see a lot more. Things are never what they seem, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think you know where it's going, you probably don't.
That's good writing to me. I want to be surprised. I don't want to know what's going to happen. So to me, if you can surprise me along the way, I really enjoy that. So I'm looking forward to that. Be good stuff. Now, of course, your letterer is a mutual friend that I've talked with on this podcast before, Joel Rodriguez, who has his own horror book out, Dust County Chronicles.
Correct, and we've actually done a little bit of a cross-promotion.
Oh, really? Okay, and how did you do that?
We connected with a fantastic artist from France named Stephanie Lavade, and because Joel's current book on Kickstarter has a vampire in it, and my book features several people who hunt vampires, we decided to do a connecting cover where my characters are fighting his.
Okay, when are we going to get to see that cover?
You can see it now.
Oh, is it out on the Kickstarter?
It is, and the art is fantastic.
Is it on both of your Kickstarters or just yours?
It is. You can get it on either one. If you back both Kickstarters for a $10 physical pledge on at least one of them, but $10 or more on each of ours, you can actually get a free 11x17 poster of the art.
Cool. Because, you know, when I've talked to Joel, I've mostly talked with him about the writing and stuff like that. And I know he does a lot of the lettering, and we've talked about that. What's your impression of how he letters? Because right at the beginning, there's a That's Me that's on the first page that I got to see. And it's a really an interesting choice of font and location and stuff like that. Why did you choose Joel? I mean, you know, I know he's friends and stuff like that, so you really can't say anything bad. But what was it about his artwork, his ability to letter, that made you want him to work on it?
Well, like you said, Joel's a friend. We do a lot of projects together. We actually work day jobs together. But it's not just about proximity. I've watched Joel. He's been in the business a relatively short amount of time, just over a year. But I've watched him grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he goes out and he spends a lot of time on his craft. Mm-hmm. And he's learned a lot about lettering and actually – like I said, he puts a lot of time into it, and I know he'll put a great effort, and I've been satisfied. I've even got him doing Spider-Man as well. So, mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't use the standard comic font on your book. He's using something that's a little – it's almost like a handwritten, like somebody's hand lettering something. With that, is that something that he developed? Because sometimes when people write, they'll scan their letters in and make them their own font. Is that how he did that, or is this a real font?
I think it's a real font, but when it comes to stuff like that, I'm like one of those who doesn't want to know how the sausage is made. I'll let him keep his mysteries. I told him I was going to probably letter it myself, and he said, "Don't do that. Let me do it for you." I said, "Okay."
Because it's funny, until you see the lettering, it's not a real comic. Because you know the book that I work with, the Stabbity Bunny and stuff like that. Joel hasn't worked on that yet, but you never know how things develop. And until we see the letter or actually put the words on the page, it's not a comic to us. And then all of a sudden we see the letters, and you go, "Oh wow, that looks like a real comic." You know, I mean, was that your impression when you started to do this too? Was that was that something that you, when you saw that, there was a sense of satisfaction? Because the letterers are one of those underappreciated abilities in comics, I think.
It's one of those things that bad lettering stands out. Mm-hmm. If the lettering is good, you don't even know it was there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lettering is insanely important. For me, to the end of what you just said is when I just had art for steak, I lettered a bunch of pages myself just so I could see how it looked. Mm-hmm. The same thing you're saying, because it makes it a comic, because you see the words with the action, and it makes it a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. I mean, you know, people don't know in the creation of things until you start to see the elements coming together. You know, and then, of course, when you actually see it printed out, and then you go to a store and you didn't put it there, but there's somebody selling your comic there. That's when you arrive. You know, you have come to the place where you're a comics creator.
Those kinds Absolutely.
Of good things. Now, before we get on to the other stuff, because you said the end of March, you're going along well, this is going to be good. So we know it's going to be a big success, so that's going to be great to develop. And I guess you'll start to work on the other issues as this wraps up.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, I'll be busting my hump to fulfill this campaign because we've already got 130 backers, and the majority of them are physical. And Luis will be back to work on art for number two. So,
good. Have you written the scripts already, pretty much?
I have the first three scripted. I have the first four arcs in treatment form with the first one more in synopsis form for the following three issues. Mm-hmm. So I know where it's going. I don't like to get too far ahead with all the details because things may change.
Yeah, reality gets in the way of comics. Yep, I know that. That happens a lot too. So before I get into the other books, there's something I don't know if everybody knows, but you're deeply involved with Scout Comics as a company.
I am.
You're involved with that. Talk a little bit about that, how you got involved with that, and what kinds of things you do for Scout.
Well, I basically became friends with James Hake through conventions, and about the same time I met you and Richard. Mm-hmm. So we all basically travel in the same circle, doing a lot of shows, meeting a lot of people. We, you know, we would hang out after the shows, and it became evident that they needed some help with production design, and I said, I am happy to help. And I befriended Jim Pruitt as well, the publisher, and basically they said, "Hey, we've got some books that need some help. Can you do it?" And I did. And anytime they have something that needs to be done, they say, "Hey, can you help?" I always say yes.
See, here's another thing that people don't understand. If you buy comics and you don't understand the process that gets them there, there are, you know, to get them to the printer, there has to be certain things done. You have to get things to fit exactly right. So when the printer gets them, they can just run them easily through their printing process and get them there. And not everybody understands that. Everybody thinks it's just sort of magic. You know, the writer writes and suddenly the artist arts and all this stuff happens and magically it comes off the printing press. But people like you are, again, we talked about lettering being, you know, one of those undervalued things. People who do design work like you do are undervalued as well, are underappreciated, maybe we should say. Because if you do your job right, nobody knows you did it.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. And if you do it bad, someone is going to notice right away. I've seen things that were on Kickstarter that made tens of thousands of dollars and it had a repeated page.
Oh.
So I mean, somebody obviously missed that in the design department.
Yeah, it's just awful to do that. And of course, you know, Richard and I have been helping along those lines too. And you provide some great, you know, instructions as to how we can do that to meet Scout's needs as well. So it's pretty cool that you're doing that, and you know, you're helping other people do it because we're not the only ones. There are several other teams that are involved mm-hmm. with Scout right now, and you're kind of the lead in all those things to keep us all up to date and keep us moving forward on the same page together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. You know, outside of creating your own stuff, having your hand in other people's, basically what is their babies, it's fulfilling. I looked back at the last year. I didn't put out anything creative. I did the steak ash can in 2019. Mm-hmm. The couch trade paperback had come out at the end of 18. So literally the only thing I put out in 2019 was that ash can. Mm-hmm. And a very small preview for Spider Man. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the year, I looked back and I had worked on over 30 different issues for Scout. And so throughout the year, I was actually putting things together, even though they weren't mine. It was probably the only thing that kept me sane.
Wow. Now, of course, your name appears on there's a credits page on the Scout. It's the inside cover. Does your name get to be on there, or are there times when it doesn't happen?
Usually it does. We did a Zinnaber sketchbook for New York that my name wasn't on there, but it's not a big deal. We needed it done, so I got it done.
Yeah. Sometimes I always say, like, editors are like Batman. We prefer the shadows. I don't if my name is going to be anywhere, I want it on the bottom. I want people to see the creators first. My job is to go through and kind of put the commas in the right place and stuff like that. So I don't consider myself anything up there with the creators. I want to do stuff like that. And the same thing with design. I mean, you are kind of the last step before it goes to the printer. And, you know, you don't want your name ahead of the writer or the artist.
No, I wouldn't even need my name on there. Honestly, it's it's not about me. It's about the creators who worked so hard on that book. So, but I'm happy to promote it for them and, you know, and basically thank them for letting me have the honor to work on their book, you know? Yeah,
it's really cool. And of course, they understand, the creators understand your part. And that sometimes that's all you need to know is that they appreciate the work you've done to help their book get out.
Exactly.
So that's enough. So as an editor, I can say that kind of thing because I understand that, that whole thing. So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I've got, you know, you've got these creations and you're working with Scout. Is there any chance that some of these are going to have a Scout label on them at some point, or is that kind of something you haven't considered yet?
Well, we have, it's not prominent in the Stake campaign, but Stake is going to be a Scout title.
Oh, good.
Okay. So it was signed a while ago, but the production's been a little slower and we have there's a policy that there needs to be 3 issues in the can before we'll even solicit a book.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we're not there, but I did want to, it's been a year since I put out the ash can and I wanted to not only get it back in people's purview, but I had this campaign in mind before we ever even signed where I wanted to work with all these great female artists that I had been following for a while. I love art and I get to see all of their takes on these characters, which it's more for me than it is for everybody else, because I get to see the fantastic art and people's interpretation of my characters brought to life, which to me is really what it's all about.
Isn't that something? I mean, when you get the artwork, you know, granted there's no lettering, there's often no coloring, you know, you get just to see what your characters, they move from your head to the printed page, and that is some kind of an experience.
Oh yeah, I walk around with my phone. If I know someone who knows about it that hasn't seen some new art, the first thing that you get when you see me is my phone in your face with a new piece of art.
See, that's a cool thing. And if anybody who's worked on a comic will understand that, because when we were working on Stabbity Bunny, when Dwayne first did, there's a character in the very first issue called Larry. And Richard had given some of those out to some people. And the moment I looked at Dwayne Biddick's take on it, I went, oh, that's Larry. Oh, my gosh, that's great. Oh, look at that. You know, it's just that experience that until you do that, you can't understand it. But once you do understand it, it's this great feeling.
You know? Absolutely. I mean, and where else could I get to work with artists from 9 different countries?
Now, let's get into the other books that you have done, and we'll catch up a little bit on those. We'll go kind of in reverse order. I think Spider-Man, which not to be confused with Spider-Man, is talk about that book and where that concept came from.
Now, that one does have an interesting story of how it came about. You said Spider-Man, which is actually where it came from, because I used to own a shop, and someone had handwritten the pull list, and they misspelled Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And the person who was reading the list out loud kept going, Spider-Man, Spider-Man. And I'm like, do you not hear what you're saying right now? And I slowed it down, and we're just sitting there. We just start chuckling at the idea of basically James Bond as a deer. I mean, what if Bambi grew up to be James Bond is the concept. And Matt McGill, the artist, I texted him the words. All I sent him was the words, Spy Deer Man. And then I followed up with another text with a description. And he said, I had it from the words. He said, I already got it. And within an hour, he had sketched out the character and sent it back to me.
Wow. That's cool. Because, again, there's that marriage between, you know, image in your head and image on the paper. It's just something great about that. Now, did you have the story in mind, or did the picture help you develop the story for that issue?
This one was completely concept-based. So at the time, I didn't have a story in mind. Mm-hmm. What I had was that we've got that X meets Y of, you know, Bambi growing up to be James Bond. What does that lend you to? It lends you to the world of Bond. And we have basically a formula already for these Bond movies. Well, what if we take it and make it completely ridiculous with satire in a world where animals and humans interact, but half the animals are anthropomorphic? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've seen it before, but it's really basically just doing something completely ridiculous. It's one of those things. I don't often make myself laugh when I'm writing, but I'll be sitting in a chair and my fiance will hear me chuckling to myself while I'm writing the pages, because it's just so ridiculous, and we can do whatever we want because there are no rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I was entertained by was the fact that the main character, of course, being a spy, there's certain things James Bond is known for, and some of those things this character does. And more than that, I'm not going to say. I want people to be entertained when they get a chance to look at it, because it's kind of fun to see that. Because James Bond itself is how do you want to describe it? It's this ridiculous thing about it. You know, everybody kind of takes it deadly seriously, but that's not the way it was written. It was written originally by Ian Fleming to be sort of a ridiculous take on the spy genre, because spies don't go around looking like Roger Moore and stuff like that.
Right.
they tend to blend into the background and stuff.
Well, and he's the worst hidden spy. He's a deer.
Yeah, he can't hide.
Exactly.
That's the interesting thing about that. And there's all kinds of stuff that goes on in the story that's fun to read, and I think people should read it. I'm not going to spoil them here. But you've done, what, one issue of that so far?
So we're going to do it in basically the James Bond style of each one is going to be a graphic novel. Mm. We did number one for this because it's our first one and we've got a big show coming up in April. So we did number one for MegaCon. Mm-hmm. And then the idea will be sort of in line with what Scout does with the nonstop concept of mm-hmm. doing a number one for collectability and to kind of get a little buzz going and then bringing out a full graphic novel later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. So you got the first one done, basically. Are you going to kickstart like a second one and go into the stuff? How's that going to happen?
I haven't decided yet.
Okay.
with all that's going on with with Stake and and Spider-Man and the shows coming up, it's just I said to Matt, because he's coming from New York to Florida for MegaCon, how soon do you need a script for the first issue to get it done for MegaCon? Mm-hmm. He gave me a date. I got him a script, and he banged out the pages, man. It was He told me he got into a role and he was doing 8 or 9 pages a day, so that was stunning.
Wow, because not many people can do that. Mm-mm. So that's a real accomplishment for that. So MegaCon is where people will see some of this stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. You'll be able to if you back the Stake Kickstarter for. We have a digital tier. We're going to include number one in there, mm-hmm. but I'll also make it available as an add-on. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, we'll be bringing the first print editions to MegaCon. Mm. And hopefully, fingers crossed, he'll be able to finish on time. But Chris Hamer is doing a cover for us as well.
Oh, cool. Because Chris did a cover for one of the Stabby Ever After.
He did. He did a fantastic cover.
No, Stabby Bunny, sorry. He didn't. I think he did do an Ever After, too. I can't remember now. But he does great covers. What a great thing. I think it was a special Stabby Bunny issue that he did a cover for.
He did one for Emmett's story.
Yeah, that's the one that he did. So
the Wrath cover.
Yeah, which is really good. I really liked that. It was kind of playing card. Mm-hmm. Theme to it. It's really, really good if you haven't seen
it. Yeah, and then he did the one for New York a couple years ago for Stabby. Yeah,
that's right, he did. That's right. So he strutted his stuff, and I think people really like his cover, so I think we'll see more of those as time goes along. So that's great. That's good. He's going to be doing those kinds of things because I always have liked his stuff, and Richard's always liked his stuff too. It's so funny because we met him going to cons before we started doing the Stabby stuff, and then we started doing it, and then he wanted to be involved with the Stabby stuff after. You know, it was just kind of this funny how we started in different stages and we kind of caught up to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Started working together with that kind of stuff. It's just the way cons go.
Yep. You know? Well, when he was down for Emmett's story, we were just hanging out, and I started telling him the idea for Spider-Man, and he was just sitting there chuckling. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, why don't you come down for MegaCon and do a cover? And he's like, well, I can't make it those dates, but let me see if I can do a cover for you. So, mm-hmm.
Cool.
I was all about that.
Great. Now, that's looking forward to that. Now, let's talk about, this is the thing that I first came across you. I think I saw you at a convention selling issues of The Couch. Why don't you talk about what The Couch is so people can get an idea what this book's about?
The Couch is about a down-and-out therapist who accidentally becomes a psychiatrist to superheroes. So basically one accidentally blasts through the door of his practice and decides to come back later for a session.
Now he's interesting, the character himself, because let's just say, well, it starts out that he's down and out, but he hasn't gotten all the way down and out yet.
No.
He continues to go down and out as the story unfolds. And all those things start to happen. And I got to, you know, when you're writing a psychiatrist, I'm always kind of curious as to how you do that. Did you talk to a psychiatrist? I mean, did you study psychiatry so that you knew what kind of things to do with this character? How did you do that?
I did a lot of research, but also I've always been a great observer of how people behave. Mm-hmm. And you know, honestly, the people who offer advice usually are just as messed up or worse than the people who are receiving it. And as much as you've read of it, you can probably see that the main character, Warren, can't get out of his own way. I mean, he is literally his own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. That's funny you said that, because I had a boss one time. And that person went on to become a psychologist. And I remember thinking that was an interesting choice, because working for her was really interesting. She was, I always kind of thought that kind of thing could be helpful to her, and apparently she did too, and she liked it so much she actually became a psychologist. That was the interesting thing about that. But you're right, some people, you know, who are in that thing, they get into it because they actually find that thing beneficial for themselves.
Yeah, I know my mom worked for a psychiatrist for a brief time, and he was kind of messed up himself, like really, really bad. Like she had stories about his personal behavior, not how he treated his patients. He was actually a very good doctor, but it's funny, the behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. See, hopefully patients don't ever see that. You know, they just get the care they need and move forward. But that doesn't always happen that way, as we know in real life. But so you've got a trade collection of the first story for that together, right?
Correct. It's the first. We did single issues for four issues, but they were all oversized. So the trade is actually 104 pages of story, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have an interesting way of advertising this when you go to a convention.
I knew we'd come to that.
you have to tell people about this, because I always find it interesting. You know, because one of the things you do when you go to a convention, there really is no place to sit down. You walk around for hours at a time, and whenever there's a chair somewhere, somebody's sitting in it, because after a while you get tired of it. You bring something to the convention for the couch, and it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to figure out what it is you bring, but talk about how you got into that and what happens when you bring that to a convention.
Well, it's obviously space permitting, because mm-hmm. as you know, some of these shows, your booth area is tiny. Like Heroes Con, it would never work unless I got two or three booth spaces. But MegaCon last year was the first time I tried it. I booked 2 6-foot tables so that we could take one out and put a couch down mm-hmm. in its place. The initial idea was to bring an actual sofa, a real sofa, mm-hmm. and then thinking logistically about the load-in at a big show like MegaCon, I really didn't want to drag it across that entire parking lot and the floor. Mm-hmm. So we found a very suitable replacement in an inflatable couch. Mm. That it's actually it's a full size couch, and mm-hmm. it's got cup holders, and it folds out into a queen size bed. So it works on multiple levels, and it definitely turns heads.
Did people get to sit in it?
Some did, and it was we had to actually set some ground rules, because randomly people would just come and sit down. They'd take off their shoes and like start rubbing their feet, and that was a bit much. So we had to start taking turns actually sitting in the couch ourselves.
Little did you know, when you did that, you were providing a service.
Yeah, and it's going to be even crazier this year, since we got a 10x10 booth. So. We're going to have the couch and some spinner racks, and Brian Silverbacks will be coming down to join us. Mm. So
now what you need to do, of course, is bring a psychiatrist in to do that. And you can actually have like offer services there, like in the comic.
Well, I heard you could do it, right? You're good with advice.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I can tell you what not to do. I can't tell you what you should do. I always say that psychiatrists don't answer anything. They ask you questions constantly.
Exactly.
Of course, podcaster does. Podcaster sits and asks questions all the time, too. But I would not in any way consider myself in any way qualified to do that kind of thing. But it would be hilarious if you had a cosplayer who would come in as the character and kind of sit there. And
that would be great. I'm just not, I could see us getting in trouble.
Well, what you could do is just put the book there, and they could sit and read the book.
Yes. A lot of people have asked if the sequel is going to be the love seat or the ottoman.
Okay. Now, let's talk about that. I mean, as far as the future for the couch. All right. You got volume one done, and mm-hmm. you know, you've set up the way things are going right now. Volume two is you've said you're real busy with stuff like that, and is that in the works too?
We will return to it. in, you know, full transparency, the Couch is a definitely a niche book. Mm-hmm. While it is superheroes, it's not superheroes front and center. Mm-hmm. So it's a labor of love that takes a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. So we've shifted our focus a bit to Spider-Man and Stake because those are a little more mainstream and easier to sell. Mm-hmm. So while we build some street cred and, you know, hopefully some sales, we'll be able to circle back around to the labor of love with the Couch. So mm-hmm. it's on a little bit of a hiatus, but Matt and I are working together on Spider-Man as well. So I still get to work with one of my favorite people.
But you know, of course, if you're going to make any of your things into a TV show,
mm-hmm.
this would be the easiest one to do because basically you got one superhero. And, you know, special effects being as affordable as they are today, you could do those kinds of things. And you could turn this into a show. I mean, there are how many networks now looking for 24/7 programming? There's got to be a slot in out there that the Couch could fill at some point.
That would be fantastic because, yeah, it would play out very well episodically. I don't know how far in you read, but everyone who reads my stuff tells me that I write very episodically. Mm-hmm. The ends of issues are almost like television breaks, which mm-hmm. It's not intentional, but it's probably because I basically spent a decade plus learning to write as a screenwriter mm-hmm. and shifted over to comics instead. So mm-hmm. I know those are the breaks that I use typically as far as pacing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, honestly, that's the way, like Jeff Johns was a movie person before he got into comics and stuff. And he uses that same kind of thing. And when he worked for Marvel, Jeff Johns was told, oh, no, it can't be a four-issue series. It's got to be six. And when he spread it out, he didn't have the same beats to it. It didn't end the same way. So it felt sort of disjointed mm-hmm. because he didn't change the story, but he added stuff to it. And so, but I read the whole trade, so that's where I got the sense from that this could work real well, as far as the kind of stuff I could, you know, and you know, you have to think like a TV mogul does, and they are looking for the least expensive way. I mean, there's a reason why reality TV is so prominent. It's because it requires just a couple cameras and some mic people, and man, you've got a TV show, and you know your stuff because it has only really one superhero in it. That's it appeals to superhero people without being, you know, let's say you don't have to have a Batmobile and you don't have to have a Batcave and you don't have to have all this other stuff that goes along with it. So there's, you know, if somebody's out there looking for a superhero related type show, that might work.
Yeah, I like to think so. That would be fantastic.
Well, anyway, so this is going to go on with this. So if people want to keep up with the stuff that you're doing, because you're being a busy guy that you are, is there ways on social media that we can follow you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's DAB282, like Dog Apple Boy. Or you can search for me as David A. Byrne, BYRNE, because David Byrne of the Talking Heads has pretty much everything without the initial.
And people don't ask you if you're related to John Byrne, do they?
No, never. just it's funny because in the comics world, I get that all the time. Sometimes I say, oh, yeah, he's my grandpa. But I wanted to come up on my own, so I didn't let him help me into the industry.
That's right.
And then, but most of the time growing up, it was actually the Talking Heads version. I was probably the only 5-year-old who knew who the Talking Heads were because people wouldn't stop asking me.
That's funny. It's the way things go. You know, it's you can't help the name you've gotten, and then everybody comes along and finds something that's a way to remember you by, and that's how this all happens. So.
Oh yes, our friend James Hake, when we were mm-hmm. at Comics Pro out in mm-hmm. Portland, mm-hmm. thought it would be funny we had to share a room, and he would mm-hmm. go in the bathroom and just start playing Talking Head songs while I couldn't get in and turn them off.
Well, of course, then you get to drink Dr. Pepper around him. There's an in joke right there for people who don't know.
Oh well, he fell asleep first, so I would just pour some down his mouth every night.
Oh, okay. This is You guys are going to have too much fun on the concert, because I have a feeling this is going to be good. Well, you know, you're doing good stuff, David, and man, you're a busy guy. That's all I can say. If you see your name on a book, it's a good one, so be sure to get it. And even if you're under production, be sure to get that, because it's going to be well put together. You won't be able to tell it, because David does a good job in putting those together. But if you see the name on there, you know he's done a good job of making it the best he can for the creators. So, you know, keep it up, David. You're doing good stuff, and you know, we'll look forward to seeing you at cons sometime soon.
Yeah, I think probably next weekend.
Oh, that's right. It was just MegaCon, or which one is that?
The Gods and Monsters.
Gods and Monsters, that's right. That's coming
up.
Yes,
our replacement Emerald City shows.
That's right. So that's probably the same day that this will come out. So when you get done listening to this, run over to Gods and Monsters in Orlando, and you'll see David there.
So sounds good.
What's going on, guys? This is Frank Gogol, writer of the 2019 indie hit Dead End Kids and of the Ringo Award-nominated collection Grief. If you've been tuning in, you may have heard my recent interview for my new book, No Heroin. No Heroin asks the question, what if Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a recovering drug addict? It's got vampires, drugs, street fights, and a hard, hard punk rock edge. It's also got a ton of heart. The story follows Kayla, a recovering heroin addict, as she struggles to right the wrongs of her days as a junkie and learns the hard way that maybe not everyone is cut out to be a hero. I wanted to stop by to let you know that No Heroin number 1 is now up for pre-order. So if you're a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, horror comics, Dead End Kids, or if you just want to check out a dope new book, I really think you'll dig No Heroin. But don't wait, pre-orders need to be in by the end of April, so you're going to want to head over to your local comic shop and let them know you want to pre-order your copy of No Heroin number 1 today.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Always great to catch up with Sam Johnson, creator of Geek Girl, Cappuccini, other good things like that. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good. Wayne, thank you for correctly pronouncing Cappuccini. I was on another show earlier, and pretty much everyone always pronounces it Cini. But as I discussed with him, it's like I thought about changing it to be spelled CH, but I think people would then possibly pronounce it Chinny, yeah. Which doesn't sound good. So we're sticking with it.
Good, good, because that's the way I like it, because I'm used to it. You and I have talked about that character for a couple of years now, so I should remember it by now, I hope. I'm usually not good with beautiful names, but that one I kind of remember because we've talked about it several times.
So, yes, so and you now, of course, she's going to be coming to Geek Girl.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You've got a Kickstarter going on right now. And you are over halfway toward your goal as we're recording this. Of course, hopefully you'll be farther along when this posts on Sunday. You've got over 100 backers, so it's good. Why don't you talk about what the Kickstarter is about and what we should know?
So the Kickstarter is, what's new on it is a new two-part story arc called Tights and Capes, but it's plenty of jump-on points for anyone that's new to Geek Girl. For those that don't know, Geek Girl is hot popular college chick Ruby Kay lands a pair of super tech glasses. Initially, she alienates her clique trying to demonstrate her powers because she's not used to the super strength she gives them. The mean girls get alienated. Her best friend Summer sticks by her, pushes her into becoming a superhero. Ruby steps up, goes from being a bit of a self-centered it girl to a superhero and saving their city. And off the back of that, she's been given an offer to head a super team.
Yeah, well, I'll talk about that because that's interesting. Of course, you know, I've long was waiting for a group to come together because, you know, superheroes, Justice League, Avengers, you name it, there's always going to be a gathering of characters and stuff. What is it about that made you go ahead and go that direction right now in the Geek Girl timeline?
Well, I had, I think I mentioned before, one of the goals with the previous Kickstarter was to get the audience built up enough that we could justify it going ongoing, because I've had a number of ideas, concepts, characters I wanted to bring to my comics for a while, and Geek Girl is a good venue for them, but it needed to be ongoing in order for me able to do what I wanted. So the character that's introduced, the jump on issue is issue 5, but the new arc, which runs in 6 and 7, you get a recap at the start of that from one of the would-be members of their team, Guano Guy, who's a creation of Mark Darden, who actually got into the contest, got into the comic by, in the previous Kickstarter, we had a reward where you and a partner or a friend could appear in this plane scene, and Mark backed it and wanted his characters to appear in this scene, Guano Guy and Mr. Marvelous Man, and I decided to integrate them into it, and it's been really fun doing that. And Mark's worked with me on the dialogue of the characters to get them right, and so Guano Guy is a wannabe member of the new super team, but he's not really cutting it.
Okay, yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, he has his own books with Guano Guy in them, and I've seen those and read them. I've actually interviewed him on this podcast as well. So that's kind of cool that you guys got to, indie people get to work together with those kind of fun things. So, yeah, looking at the beginning, like he's, and of course, you made some of the pages from the next issue available to me to read, and we get to see Guano Guy in that first couple pages where he talks about the team that's coming together and stuff like that. So there's interesting things going on about that. But, you know, the part that excited me the most in those pages you sent me has to do with my favorite character of the whole bunch, and that's Summer. Do you want to talk about Summer and what's going on with her?
Yeah, I mean, I know, I thought that would be the case when I know you enjoy the character. And yeah. Basically, what happened with Summer was after the initial arc of the miniseries, when Ruby saved the city, taking down Big Bad Lightning Storm, because she got electrocuted and put in a coma, Ruby did. Summer filled in for her, partly due to feeling guilty, because she kind of pushed her into being a superhero. She jokingly came up with the name Geek Girl after Ruby doing her klutziness with the drinks, knocking them over her mean girl friends. And Summer's a fashion designer, so she designed the costume. And Summer is into superheroes, which is not something Ruby was particularly familiar with. So Summer stepped in as a temporary thing because the glasses are, you know, the chip in the super tech glasses are where the powers come from. So as long as you've got them, you've got the glasses. Summer stepped in, but wasn't too great at it. But in ultimately handing things back to Ruby, even after the fact, Summer really, really put herself on the line and really proved that even if she isn't the greatest superhero, she is truly a heroine in her own right, what she did for Ruby. And you know, there was a bit of friction when initially Summer turned up after Ruby came out of the coma at her door wearing the Geek Girl costume, which Ruby was like, what the hell? But they were viewing things from different perspectives. Everything's been made up between them. And now in the new series, or in the new story arc, rather, they go into a very outlandish, fancy dress-up club night. And Ruby wants to go incognito. And she offers Summer to go in the costume and the glasses, which Summer is very overjoyed about, because it's not just an aesthetic thing. She's got the glasses, so she'll get to play with the powers again.
Yeah, that'd be fun for her. I've always been wondering what to do. It's tough to deal with a secondary, I guess, if you want to call her that, kind of character. You know, you don't want her to be on the sidelines all the time, but you don't want her in the costume all the time either, because that's your main character. So it's tough to know what to do, and I think this is a pretty creative way to get her to be involved in what's going on. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we're going to have with Summer from this is that, as I said, though she wasn't she didn't have the propensity for being a superhero that Ruby did. She loved it. She loved having the powers. She loved all that. And now she's getting another taste of it. You know, she was never going to be taking over as the official geek girl. It was always a stand-in, but she's going to get another go with the powers and what that's going to mean to her and what that's going to sort of... Without spoilerizing, it's kind of difficult when you've had this and you've taken it and it's been taken away from you. Where does she go? So that's something we're going to be exploring after this arc.
Because, you know, she's that kind of girl, though. It's she will give it back.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there was no question. You know, she was caretaking and it was Ruby. But having said that, she's had a taste of superpowers and she likes that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope there's something for her in the future is all I can say. I don't know what you've got planned for her, but I love the character. I think she's kind of funny. I relate to her most because she understands all this good stuff about superheroes and all. So to see her get to play a part... It's kind of good. You shouldn't just be on the sidelines, in my opinion. But we'll wait and see what you have in mind, because you've done real well with the character so far. It got me, you know, relating to her and enjoying her character. So I'm going to be anxious to see what you do with her.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say people really enjoyed her in the costume before, and we've just added a new Kickstarter reward where you can get all of her appearances in the costume, including any variant covers and whatnot. So it's like, this is called a Total Summer is the reward. So for summer fans, there's a sort of special pack, and you get a print free with her and Shuri from Black Panther as well. So that's quite cool.
Very cool. Of course, I would like to point out that as we're recording, you're over halfway toward your goal. Now, it translates into American dollars as 4,062. What is it in British pounds?
In British pounds, it's just over 3,000.
3,000, okay. Now, as we're recording, you're over 100 backers, so that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. According to Kickstarter, you're going to... we need to get this done by Tuesday, March 31st. Interesting, you've got scheduled to at Eastern time. It's going to end up just before midnight that night.
Yeah, I wanted to do that because it's like if people are sort of thinking it's going to end on March 31st, where I am in the UK, if you're on Eastern time, that would end, well, 5 hours or 4 hours, depending on where we are with the clocks at that point, before midnight. So I don't want people, you know, in America to go on there and, you know, at the last minute and find, oh, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So it actually ends 5 a.m. in UK time or 4 a.m. I'm not quite sure where we're going to be with the time difference then. But either way, it'll be running through to midnight for those on Easter Standard Time.
Very cool. Now, of course, how many Kickstarters have you done? What number is this for you?
This is the fourth.
Fourth one. Okay. And you've been successful. I think everyone. Have you done everyone a success? Or
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's Bill, and it's like the first one, it was, you know, I didn't have that much experience, so I set the target very low. The second one, I knew more what I was doing, but I kind of set the target as what we achieved in the first one. So those did about the same, which, as in the first one, way exceeded its goal because I set it low because, you know, it was experimental for me. And then the goal with the next one was to get it significantly bigger, which we did. And then that's the same with this one. I mean, as you know, it's gratifying that a lot of people are coming back for the new two-part arc. But as I say, for those that are new to it, there's plenty. I mean, everything's available on there, and you've got various jump on points from the trades to the new direction beginning in issue 5, from the beginning of the ongoing series, which there's the trade of the first issue. So there's any entry point you want. And as I say, even if you come in on issue 6 and 7, Guano Guy helpfully gives us a recap from his skewed perspective mm-hmm. at the start. So you're all set up whichever way you come into it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, the characters, and you and I have talked about this before, we've talked several times, I like the way that you breathe life into these characters. They actually exist in my mind. I'm actually watching something really happen, like Summer, you know, as I mentioned. And, of course, Ruby the same. I mean, to me, they're real people. You're documenting, and if you ever watched the show Supernatural in America, they have God is sort of documenting the Winchester brothers' adventures. And I kind of feel like you're the person documenting Geek Girl's adventures. along those lines. These are real people. You just happen to be, you know, writing down and telling us their stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's partly the relationship between Summer and Ruby, which kind of grounds things, and you can see the love they have for each other. And it's often, reviews have often said that the dialogue comes across as real, which is what I want. And, you know, and then, you know, when they're thrown into these outlandish situations with fantastic, and we've got some new villains coming up who are somewhat outlandish, which I'll talk a little bit about, but hopefully when they're thrown into these situations, you're really going to, you know, care about them and feel that the threat is real. I mean, In the first arc, the miniseries, yeah, Ruby did save the city from the big bad, but she did end up in a coma. Mm-hmm. And when Summer, you know, tried to fill in, she was in serious, serious danger and really did take a beating.
Mm-hmm. Now, we need to talk about some of the other characters. Of course, Ruby, you know, you've described her, she being the central character around which all this rotates. We've discussed her a lot in the past, but there's some other characters I think we should talk a little bit more about. There's the guy that's behind the bringing together the super team, name it Johnny. Do you want to talk about him a little bit more? Because we get a little news about him in this issue, and I don't know, you know, you tell us how much you want us to know before we read the book.
Yeah, I don't think anything with him is too spoilery. Basically, he was a super tech weapons dealer. He kind of had a scare from Neon Girl, who's the long-term resident big superhero and the first lady of superheroism of where they live in Maine. She had the suspicion that he was selling this super tech weaponry indiscriminately, and this had contributed to the crime wave that was going on. Now, this has neither been confirmed nor denied, but it put an idea in his head to maybe do something good and with these powers and with these weaponry and his resources, rather than just selling them to whoever he may or may not have been selling them to. So he, because of the success of Geek Girl, he has the idea of her heading up a super team for him. But then while these are coming together, his wife, who's very heavily pregnant, then actually it looks like she's going to be giving birth early. So what's set up for the new story arc is he's now needs to take a bit of a time out from the superhero thing before the team has actually been officially gotten off the ground, which facilitates Ruby and Summer and new teammate the Minger having a night off and going to this club.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now the Minger, that's the girl with the helmet, right?
Yeah.
Talk about her. I mean, what do we need to know about her as
so she goes? Not too much has been given away about her yet. She's clearly somewhat defensive. When they talk about her going to this club, she's not sure about that because she wears this helmet that covers the majority of her face all the time, seemingly. So she feels quite conspicuous. But luckily, the club night they're going to, everyone is dressed outlandishly, so they're like, she's going to be fine there. But yeah, there's a story to her. We're going to find out more about her in this new arc. And we've also got other team members coming into the fray. Tyler, who was introduced at the end of the Crime War arc, which was in the first four issues of the ongoing, who's a telepath, telekinetic. He arrives at the HQ as well, but we're gonna focus on him and the other would be member of the team, the Whooper, who was involved in the flights to the HQ that got attacked, in which Guano Guy was on. And the Whooper was, and the Whooper saved it, and Guano Guy did Guano Guy, which is not very good unless there's a lot of money involved for him. So we're gradually going to get to know these people. The Whooper is now holed up at a hotel after this flight incident, and Tyler's going to stick around and have a look around the HQ while we go to the club with the girls. So we're not going to focus on too many at once. You're not going to get bombarded with these characters because we've also got other things going on as well as subplots that are building, such as the guy into it and that's into the occult, who's seemingly summoning some lady in his bathroom mirror in the hopes of trying to track down the guy that shot him, basically, but he managed to survive due to this occult he doubles with, was able to get the bullet taken out and come back from that, but now he's trying to track this guy down, whoever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this is being a supernatural thing. This is the perfect way to bring in another creation of yours, the one that I got the name right, Cabracini.
Yeah.
What do people need to know about her? Let's say they haven't had a chance to meet her yet. What do you want people to know about her?
So the likelihood is that you probably haven't met her yet, because she's so far just appeared in – she appeared annually in a Halloween issue of an anthology called Effects. But her mini-series, which has been – the majority of it's been done for some time, I'm deliberately holding off on until she's been introduced in pages of Geek Girl, so more people are familiar with her. So she's an ex-hooker. She's an ex-junkie. She discovered voodoo as a way of fighting back against her boyfriend slash pimp. And she found combining with it with weapons she kind of liked. Voodoo's become her new addiction, taking over drugs. She's created a bastardized version of it, and she can utilize her voodoo to access this dimension called the infinite, which can be used between wherever she is and where she wants to find someone at as a dimensional gateway. And that's where, well, basically her name gets dropped in the new arc when the guy I referred to, the occult dabbler, is trying to find a way to find the guy that shot him and apparently robbed him as well. And Cabra's name gets put forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That'll be good. So, in other words, you are introducing her to everybody who reads Geek Girl, as well as to, maybe reintroducing her to people who have read her before.
Yeah, yeah. But this, one of my favorite scenes with her, which is a great introduction to her, hasn't been in anything, and that I've saved that, and that's going to be in the Geek Girl, where she's basically walking around a supermarket, smoking a cigarette, buying tampons, chewing the scenery, and the teller has a somewhat harrowing experience with her, and that's the introduction to her, and from there we're going to see her come properly into the world of Geek Girl and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the cover is for 6 is different. Who's the cover on this Geek Girl number 6? Who did that?
So the regular cover is Jason Hare, spelled H-E-H-I-R. He's done the regular covers for issues 6 and 7. Mm-hmm. 6 being Ruby in front of HQ, 7 being Summer flying over the club in the Geek Girl gear. He's great. We've also got him to do we've started work on a limited print that so far features Harley Quinn and Geek Girl, but is not going to get released until if and when we hit a stretch goal. And then what will happen if we do is it's going to be a free print that goes to anyone that backs any limited variant. And it's a big Geek Girl team up. So the initial thing that will get released will be Harley and Ruby. And then if we can go beyond, if we hit that and then go beyond it to other stretch goals, people will get to vote on who else they want to see team up with Ruby, and they'll be added to this print. So it'll be quite a collectible.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's going to be interesting. Now, I've got to ask, because you created this character that still gets to me or bothers me every time I think about him.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, talk about that character. You know who I'm referring to. Is that the guy going to show up in upcoming issues?
What, are we talking about the man with the brain fused with the pigs?
Yes. He's still. I get bothered every time I think about it. Oh goodness.
So Pighead was the leader of the League of Larcenists that grew into the Legion of Larcenists, but got taken down by Geek Girl and the aforementioned Tyler, along with Neon Girl at the end of the Crime War arc. So basically, various villains have been stopped, and those villains, unless they've been killed, which not many of them have, are going to be coming back. But that's going to be somewhere down the line. But like characters like Nina Dante, the Uber Alt Girl, and Pighead, I've definitely got things in mind for them, and they're not the only ones that will be returning.
Well, it still bothers me, I guess. There's something about that whole notion of a person's mind fused with a pig's mind.
And half Peppa Pig's head sewn onto it.
Yeah. Oh, bleh. You know, I just kind of, you know, in a way, it's good because he's a bad guy. I mean, I get a reaction just thinking about him or looking at him and stuff like that. And of course, when he speaks, his the text is reversed out and stuff. It means that he sounds different, even when he talks. It's all very different stuff. So I really like the way you put that together because that's. That is stuff that just gets me, I have to tell you,
Yeah, well, the League of Larcenists were fun to write, and we've got a new crew of villains coming into it in the first part of the new story arc. We were introduced in issue 5 to Digger Mensch, who was Johnny Carlisle's kind of right-hand man who's helped set things up with this super team. Now, it turns out that's going to be a bit of a conflict of interest because this Digger is actually mates with a bunch of super villains, and they're not that crazy about him helping facilitate the introduction of a superhero team. So we're going to meet Digger's crew, including Papa Potato, who's made out of mashed potato and can produce various potato elements. He can produce French fries out of his fists, Wolverine style, as well as various potato products from various other areas, which can get slightly gross as we get more into it. So he's fun. So we've got him and Scar, who's into the old Scar look, SKA, and Black Mass, who can expand into the sort of like rubber Black Mass. So we're going to be introducing those in the new arc as well. And they're Papa Potato is certainly certainly a standout.
Goodness, oh my goodness. Okay, this is going to be really... It's interesting it has to do with food or animals and stuff like that. All this stuff has to do with. So I'm kind of intrigued because that's... You know, I'm always thinking about the guy who does the song parodies, and he always has to do with food. Instead of being, you know, every song that he'd do, he'd have to do something with food. And he did this, instead of being doing Bad for Michael Jackson, he called it Fat. And he had all get dressed up in this great big thing. And they're, of course, when they're shooting, there's always food around and stuff like that to keep people going. And he looked over and he thought, maybe I better not have that extra cookie or I'll end up looking like this kind of thing. And it's kind of the direction you're going with that. It's, you know, why the characters have to do with food? I mean, is this something that you've been conscious of or it just kind of naturally happened? How did this work?
No, I mean, Pighead, you're making the association because of, you know, obviously like bacon, but I don't think he's food based as such. I mean, Papa Potatoes food thing is a sort of comforting thing, and things get a bit fractious between this crew, and if things look like they're going to blow up, which they do between Digger and Scar, then Papa likes to defuse things by offering some French fries out of his fists.
Okay. I, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about maybe so much is now it's an ongoing. This gives you the freedom to do these kind of characters and to make these things happen. As an ongoing, what's the schedule going to be? Is it going to be bi-monthly? It's kind of a lot to do a monthly comic. What do you have in mind for that?
I mean, an indie comic, the finances of it, putting it together and the time, you know, it takes, it, a monthly is at this time is not a realistic proposition. So I can't really say except that the two new issues will be out in August. Then there'll be another one at some point after that, and then there'll be the trade. But I can't really talk to the – I mean, there's an idea. There's always the sort of possibility of having more than one artist, but Carlos is such a perfect fit for it. You know, I really want him to do all of it if possible. But also, you know, they ain't cheap to put together. Can't, you know, go to Kickstarter every 5 minutes. So yeah, that's just all I can say is that it you know, the issue 6 and 7, the new arc, will be out in August. Obviously pre-ordering it on Kickstarter now. And and that it is ongoing. And I've got, you know, I've got big, so much I want to bring to it. And the arc with Carbaccini is a big arc. And as I say, revisiting, well, bringing back old villains and getting to know this new super team. There's a lot going on. Oh, and the Mean Girls as well, who were, now that Geek Girl is popular, they kind of, you know, well, now that Ruby is popular as Geek Girl, whereas they previously alienated, now they want to be a part of that, and they really make a sort of bid for that, as it were, in this new arc, in their dress that they arrive to the fancy dress club night in.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be interesting. So as far as like, there's not really a regular schedule. It's something we need to stay tuned and kind of follow and keep up with you to know when the issues are coming.
Yeah, I mean, I always have put the back page of whatever the most recent issue is will say when the next one's coming. So it's not a concern. You're gonna, if you buy it, you will know when the next one's coming.
Okay, that's really good. Now, of course, this ties into social media and stuff like that. Do you update social media as far as these things too? I mean, do you talk about like when the next one's coming through social media?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's Geek-Girl Comics. There's Geek-Girl Comic Book Facebook group. There's Facebook pages, Twitter, Ruby_K, which is KAYE_. I'm Das Sam Johnson. Sam Johnson Comics on Instagram. There's loads. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, if you look for it, you're gonna find it.
Okay, because this is kind of fun for me to get to see you now going where you've always wanted to go and to do these kinds of things that you've been really, you know, you and I've talked about for a long time about that you have a lot of ideas you really like to bring to this. And It's nice that Geek Girl now is taking off and making things possible for you to do all these things, because I've always, you have quite a vivid imagination, as I like to point out, and you do extremely well. One of the things I always have loved, and we've talked about several times, about female characters and women, that you do those very well. And I always think that's a failing of comic books, is that we don't quite get women as well. And you do them very realistically, like I said. They speak to me. And so to see you getting to do all these wonderful things is to me very satisfying. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I'm interested in all of the characters involved, and you know, the inverted commas Mean Girls, the perspective we'd seen them from so far was, you know, we were Team Ruby and they kind of fell out with her because, you know, the initial thing was Ruby trying to show off her powers. They didn't believe she really had them. All they could see is her knocking food and drinks all over them. And this was not cool. So we were at it from Ruby's perspective. We knew that she had the powers. But as I say, we were completely Team Ruby, and these girls didn't really seem to have anything to redeem them. But we may see a little bit more to them in this new arc.
Yeah, which will be good. Now, well, I forget the name off the top of my head of the guy that is the superhero in in Maine that they have bumped into, who took a shine to Summer. What's his name?
Pitbull, the jock. Pitbull, the jocks.
Yeah. Yeah, are we going to see him back? Because I kind of liked his character. He was, again, you make these people as if a real person had superhero powers, instead of somebody, you know, who's, because my favorites are the DC characters and they're very iconic, and so they aren't necessarily very realistic in that sense. Marvel's more realistic, but you tend to make them that I, you know, like with him, I could see somebody, you know, with getting powers and acting like that. And so I kind of liked him too, as far as, you know, who he is and being very a very normal guy of all this. Is he going to be coming back?
There's as I say, aside from anyone that's been killed, which aren't many, I think I want to bring back just about all of them. Mm-hmm. There's no immediate plans with Pitbull, but he is a fun character. I mean, he, when Summer was filling in, he took her under his wing and tried to, you know, help her and train her a bit. And yeah, I mean, he's the fungi, you know, he's fighting crime, not literally, but metaphorically fighting crime with one hand while carrying a beer in the other. Mm-hmm. So he's great fun to do. So yeah, certainly like to bring him back. But at the moment, we've got all these new characters to get into. And as I say, the new arc is described as Mean Girls meets Superheroes plus weirdness. So we're going to see, as I say, more about what those mean girls like Karin, who seemed like the most arch of them, are going to see more about what they're about. Mm-hmm. And the weirdness is going to come in. And we've mentioned, you know, Papa Potato, Cabrini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman. Oh, and in fact, there's two very significant characters that I haven't even touched on yet that tie into the plane getting attacked when some of the superheroes are on it. And they've got a role to play in this new arc as well. It's going to be, there's a lot coming together, but it's, I say, we're not going to overload people. We're not focusing on, you know, say that some of the members of the new team aren't going to figure until after this arc. So we focus on at the core of it, the Minga, Ruby and Summer, but there's going to be some interesting things occurring in this club.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting because I don't think you've named this group yet. Have you? I don't remember a name.
No, at the moment it's, you know, it's kind of, for Johnny Carlisle, it's a work in progress. He's set up this thing called the K Foundation, named after Ruby K, which is, you know, seemingly a doer of good deeds. They rebuilt the police stations that licensed on trash, and he's put together this super team, but they're not, you know, they're not officially in the public arena yet. And then the Spanner kind of gets thrown in the works by his wife. Well, having a baby prematurely, well, not prematurely, but early. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, because he's been so tied up in setting everything up, she's kind of got paranoid. She had got paranoid that he was maybe cheating on her. So he's now, I really need to show you, you know, how much I love you and that you and the baby are my priorities. So this super team, they've got their Deluxe HQ, they're getting full pay. But quite where it's going to go from there, they don't know. Their bigger concern at the moment is, yeah, let's go and get drunk.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, if you go to the Kickstarter, and we should point out, when you say tights and capes, it's not the word and, it's the letter N, tights and capes. If you go to Kickstarter and say Geek Girl, this should pop up, and of course you got to hyphenate. We always have to point that out. Very important.
Hyphenate. Geek hyphen girl, it'll come up. It'll show the previous ones, but it'll show the one that's run it. It won't be a problem. Also, geekgirlcomics.com links straight to it.
Okay. Now, the interesting thing about the video that's on there is we get to see you talk on this.
Yeah.
I don't think you've done that before in these Kickstarters. This is our time to actually see you walking around and talking about the subject, because you're animated when you're talking about it, because obviously you're interested in that stuff. It's kind of fun to actually see you for a change.
Yeah, and I was in the previous.
Oh, were you? I remember.
At least two, but mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some of that. You get a bit of me in there. Yeah.
Which is good. Now, another thing too is the image that is on the Kickstarter page when you before you click the video. You've got several characters on there. Of course, I see Guano Guy, I see Ruby, I see Summer, and other ones I may not recognize. Are these people at the party?
Well, if you think about it, if you look closely, because they're not dressed as they normally would be, you might recognize them.
Okay.
Not all of them, but some of them.
Okay, so I need to pay more attention, go back and read it a little closer.
Yeah, I mean, this is, everyone's dressed outlandishly for this club night. So, yeah, I mean, Ruby on the six cover, the two covers interlock with this fantastic club lighting that Chunlin's done, and Ruby is in a black dress with a black mask, so she. Deliberately, you know, not wanting to look like Geek Girl, hence Summer getting the opportunity to go as Geek Girl.
Yeah, so, okay. Maybe it's giving away too much to ask if these guys are at the party. Is this all the party?
The left hand, the issue six cover is not at the party. Obviously, Geek Girl will be there. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the other one will be at the party.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So,
and the Minger as well, who's on the issue six cover.
Okay, all right. So we need to pay attention as we go along and figure out who these good people are. Because some of them, like I said, I can figure out. The other ones I haven't quite deduced yet, so I have to go back and read a little more and pay attention to who those people are. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, they're wearing superheroine costumes, which is not their usual attire. They've got masks on, so, you know, so you might need to put it together. But I'm deliberately not spelling this out because there's that's kind of intentional because there's a moment in it where this is spelled out and it's a slightly jaw-dropping moment for Ruby and Summer.
Yeah, don't spoil it. I hate to be spoiled. I like to be teased, but I don't want to be spoiled.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's one thing in particular to do with one of them's particular outfits that's quite significant, so it's best left as a revelation.
Yeah, I'd rather read it. So, yeah, that's good. I'm glad for that. So, it's gonna be fun to read this book. Now, you said August is when we're expected. You should have all the pieces together and it should start coming out.
Yeah.
So it's not far off. It's not far away.
But it's you know, the Kickstarter right now is the focus, and that's where to get it.
Okay.
And if you're buying digital, there's no gain in sort of waiting until after the Kickstarter. It's not going to be any cheaper or anything like that. And if you're buying physical, then, you know, there's all kinds of extra stuff that you'll be able to get here that you can't get elsewhere, hopefully, which will include this free team-up print with Harley Quinn and potentially other characters.
Okay. Well, it's looking great. I mean, as I said, you right now, as we're recording this, you're more than halfway there. We want to get a lot closer. So if you haven't already pledged to this, you know, make sure you get to Geek Girl Tights and Capes, and it has other plus previous issues and TPBs, trade paperbacks, in it. Go to Kickstarter, support this, because we want to make sure this gets out there. And Sam's already said he's got other good stretch goals in mind, so we need to get that stuff done. And I'm really looking forward to this. I always got to ask, are there other projects you're working on? Although I imagine this is kind of keeping you busy.
This is, right now, this is my absolute focus. I mean, I've just got so much I want to put into it. I had a dream last night that I want to bring some weirdness from that into it. And there's a big picture here with a lot of pieces, and I really want to get, you know, developing that. And in the fact that this runs until the end of March, and then the books won't come out until August is nice for me, because usually I'm sort of almost constantly having to promote something, and that will give me time to really get into writing some more issues, which would be great.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, there's one thing I got to ask you, because you have talked about Doom Patrol in the past. Have you had a chance to watch the DC Universe Doom Patrol show?
Yeah, it wasn't available in the UK, and it finally has been made available. So I think it's great. I've watched all but the last two episodes, and I think it's great. Have you seen it?
I've seen parts of it. My roommate and I he watched a couple on an airplane flight that he was doing. And then now we're all catching up. We want to catch it all up together. So we're about three or four episodes in. It is wild stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, it really does it justice. I mean, it taps into the Grant Morrison run, which is, you know, my biggest influence, but also into other things. And they've done a really, I think, cool Dorothy Spinner, the character in the comics that's a kind of sort of almost like a half monkey girl, not quite as severe as that, but she has, you know, sort of monkey-like features. And as far as I'm aware, I may be wrong, I'm not an absolute completist, but as far as I'm aware, we've never had an explanation of why she is that way physically in the comics, and they've done that in the series in a really cool way, and tapped into other things, like Rita Farr is great in it, and she's not even in the Morrison run. The actress playing is great, and it just works so well. It's just great. I love it.
So you're hoping for more?
Oh, they know that they're doing the second series. I know they are. So it's been really well received, and it's so inventive. And you know, while homaging a lot of Grant Morrison stuff and utilizing it, there's plenty that's completely new to it. It's not just retreading that. So it's the best of both worlds, really. It's just great.
Because I noticed that even when they win, they seem to lose in the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, I mean, they're a conflicted bunch. I mean, Larry Traynor in particular is not kind of like the most heroic character, and Rita as well. But they grow, and they are the underdogs, as it were. But it's true, and the music as well. That some of the episodes have got music which is really integral to it, like David Bowie's Lazarus. The scene with Larry Traynor, Negative Man, and yeah, I've got nothing bad. I mean, there's if I was going to pick anything, I think there's a couple of bits that I've not entirely understood why they're doing what they're doing in those situations, but that's about my only criticism. I could go more criticism, but overwhelmingly, it's absolutely great.
Cool. The other thing you and I often talk about is Deadpool. How are you feeling about how the movies are going in the comics? Are you keeping up with Deadpool? Because this might be distracting you, all this good stuff of yours.
Well, I mean, Deadpool, it's been a while since Deadpool 2 now. I think they've started work on Deadpool 3, but that's not on the horizon. I'm up on the comic. The comic now, we've got Deadpool as the king of the monsters, which is all right. I don't know how much mileage there is in that. It's a new direction, whereas the previous run of Deadpool was kind of, I don't think, particularly offering anything massively new. So around Chris Bacalo, very nice art. Kelly Thompson's done a good job writing it. So I'm interested. I'd say I'm kind of, as I say, the king of the monsters set up. I don't know how far they can go with that, but I'm along for the ride. But I'm kind of more interested to see where they go beyond it.
I still hope you get to write Deadpool someday.
Yeah, I mean that was a big aspiration of mine, and still is an aspiration of mine. But right now it's like I'm so enjoying what I'm doing with Geek Girl, and I need to be more sort of well known and established, I think, before it's a realistic proposition to write Deadpool, and so that's all good.
Well, we know that Marvel looks at the indie comics and the comic companies that aren't quite Marvel yet, and they pick a lot of the writers like Mr. Rosenberg and other people like that and bring them into their stuff as they go along. Cullen Bunn was that way too, and they will find people that are good in the other than Marvel companies and bring them on in and set them free on there, so you might get their attention sometime, I hope.
Yeah. I mean, Carl Bracini has similarities to Deadpool. They're both for hire, and they're both more whacked out. So yeah, there's certainly that potential.
Well, it'd be good stuff. Well, I can't wait to see the stuff that you're going. I mean, you're talking about issue 7. I mean, do you have an idea how many issues you want to do now, or is that still kind of nebulous in your head?
It's just ongoing. I mean, I've got no shortage of ideas I want to bring to it, and I'm as I bring these ideas to the page, I'm coming up with new ones. For example, what's going on with Summer, that wasn't planned, so it can go in all different directions. I'm just happy to run with it.
Sometimes the characters write themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really enjoying it.
That's good. Well, again, it's Geek-Girl. Tights and Capes, get to the Kickstarter and support it, because we want to see more of this good stuff. And Sam, keep it up. Well, as always, you do good stuff, and I'm really anxious to see what you're going to be doing in the future with all these great characters.
Thank you, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.